Hello and welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2019 season. The program notes I'm reading today are for the performances by the North Carolina Symphony at 8 p.m. on Friday, May 17th, and on Saturday, May 18th, in Maymandy Concert Hall, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh. Please note that the program notes for these concerts are different from the notes for the symphony concert at 12 noon on Friday, May 17th, in Maymandy Hall. Those notes are recorded in a separate audio file, as the program is slightly different. This performance will be conducted by North Carolina Symphony Musical Director Grant Llewellyn. The featured soloist will be pianist Jonathan Biss. The program on this performance will include the following. The North Carolina Symphony comes onto the stage to perform the Overture to the Creatures of Prometheus, Opus 43, by Ludwig von Beethoven. And that will be followed by the Piano Concerto No. 3 in C minor, Opus 37, also by Beethoven. And that will feature the guest soloist Jonathan Biss. Then, following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage to perform Watermark for Piano and Orchestra by Caroline Shaw. This is a work that was co-commissioned by the North Carolina Symphony and also will feature the guest pianist Jonathan Biss. And the program will conclude with music by Sergei Prokofiev, the Classical Symphony, Opus 25. Now I'll begin our reading of the symphony notes, but first some information about our guest soloist. Jonathan Biss was recently named co-artistic director at the Marlboro Music Festival, where he has spent 12 summers. A member of the faculty of his alma mater, the Curtis Institute of Music, since 2010, Biss leads the first massive open online course offered by a classical music conservatory exploring Beethoven's piano sonatas, which has reached more than 150,000 people in 185 countries. As the 250th anniversary of Beethoven's birth approaches in 2020, Biss continues adding lectures to his online course and progresses in his 9-year, 9-disc recording cycle of the complete piano sonatas. This season, Biss premieres Caroline Shaw's new concerto alongside Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 3 at the Seattle Symphony, and then performs both works, of course, here with the North Carolina Symphony, also with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra and the Lausanne Chamber Orchestra. He also performs with many other orchestras and tours in Finland, Sweden, and the Netherlands. The North Carolina Symphony comes onto the stage to perform the Overture to the Creatures of Prometheus, Opus 43, by Ludwig von Beethoven. Beethoven was born December 16, 1770, in Bonn, Germany, and he died March 26, 1827, in Vienna. The work was composed in 1800 and 1801, and the first performance was March 28, 1801, at the Imperial Court Theater in Vienna. Now here is the overview. In 1800, Beethoven was still a stranger in Vienna, trying to establish his reputation at court. The ballet The Creatures of Prometheus was his first important commission for the Viennese court theater. It was premiered in March of 1801 and achieved moderate success at first, receiving 20 performances in its first season and 13 in the second, but none thereafter. The overture, which quickly acquired an independent life, appeared in print in 1804 and remains the only part of the ballet that is frequently performed. It is rooted in 18th century techniques and tradition and has little relationship to the rest of the ballet. Since the original text and choreography are lost, the story, loosely based on Greek mythology, can be only partly reconstructed. It tells of Prometheus, an exalted spirit, who, finding the people of the time ignorant, creates statues of a man and a woman to bring to life. He then takes the statues to Mount Parnassus, where various characters of antiquity instruct them in knowledge and the arts. The scenario, fortunately, deviates considerably from the myth in which Zeus punishes Prometheus for elevating man to the status of the gods by chaining him to a rock where a vulture visits him daily to eat his ever-regenerating liver. Unfortunately, the rigid conventions of Viennese theater did not mesh with Beethoven's rebellious spirit, and no further commissions for ballets ever came his way. Well, here's what to listen for. In the grand finale, number 16, Beethoven used a theme which he used again immediately thereafter in contradances, and subsequently twice more as the theme for the piano variations, Opus 35, and the variations in the finale of his Symphony No. 3, the Eroica Symphony. This work was created for two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, two horns, two trumpets, timpani, and strings. Next, the North Carolina Symphony will perform the Piano Concerto No. 3 in C minor, Opus 37, also by Beethoven. And Beethoven, as we mentioned, was born 1770 on December 16th in Bonn, Germany. He died March 26th, 1827 in Vienna. This particular composition was created between the years of 1800 and 1803, and the first performance was April 4th, 1803 in Vienna at the Theater an der Wien with the composer as the soloist. Now here is the overview. In 1803, Emanuel Schikaneder, the colorful character who figured so prominently in the closing pages of Mozart's life as the librettist and producer of the Magic Flute, took over the management of Vienna's Theater an der Wien. His house was locked in a fierce competitive battle with the court-subsidized Kärntner Theater run by Baron Peter von Braun. When von Braun hired the distinguished Luigi Cherubini as resident composer, Schikaneder felt obliged to counter with his own music master, and he approached Beethoven with an offer. Well, Beethoven had felt the need to write for the stage for some time, and he gladly accepted, especially since the job carried free lodging in the theater as part of the compensation. He and Schikaneder dutifully plowed through a small library of possibilities for an operatic subject, but none inspired Beethoven until he took up work on Fidelio late in 1803. In the meantime, Beethoven took advantage of his theatrical connection to put some of his instrumental works on display. Since opera was forbidden in Catholic countries during Lent at that time, the Theater an der Wien was available for concerts in the early spring, and Beethoven scheduled such an event during April 1803. Now, it had been fully 3 years since he last presented a concert entirely of his own music, and he had several scores that were awaiting their first presentations, including the Second Symphony, the Oratorio Christ on the Mount of Olives, and this, the Third Piano Concerto. He programmed all of these and, for good measure, tossed in the First Symphony, which had been premiered at his concert 3 years earlier. Well, when word of this performance reached Baron von Braun at the Kärntner Theater, he thought that the same night would be an appropriate one on which to present Haydn's The Creation, then the most popular composer and music in Europe. He immediately engaged a double orchestra of Vienna's best performers and printed posters to announce the event. He beat Beethoven and Schikaneder to the punch. When they went to hire orchestral players, they found the ones they wanted were already committed to von Braun and had to settle for a pickup ensemble of second-rate musicians. Beethoven proceeded enthusiastically with plans for the concert, working right up to the last minute, putting finishing touches on the new compositions. His pupil Ferdinand Ries found him in bed writing trombone parts for the oratorio only 3 hours before the rehearsal began. He had only a single rehearsal on the concert day for this wealth of unfamiliar music, and with his less-than-adept players. It is little wonder that it went poorly. The rehearsal began at 8 in the morning, and Ries recalled it was a terrible one, lasting 6.5 hours and leaving Beethoven more or less discontented. At 2:30 in the afternoon, his patron, the Prince Karl Lichnowsky, who had been present from the beginning, ordered large baskets of bread and butter, cold meat and wine to be brought in. He invited in a very friendly manner everyone to partake, and all helped themselves with both hands. As a result, everybody grew good-humored. Well, the rehearsal was able to continue and ended only shortly before the concert began at 6 p.m. The public and critical response to the concert was lukewarm, undoubtedly due in large part to the inadequate performance. Beethoven, however, was delighted to have played his music for the Viennese public, and he was well on his way to becoming recognized more for his ability as a composer than as a pianist. Ignaz von Seefried, composer of light operas and conductor of the Theater an der Wien, participated in the premiere of the third concerto as page-turner for Beethoven, who was the soloist. Von Seefried reported, "He invited me to turn pages for him during the playing of his concerto, but heavens, this was more easily said than done. I saw almost completely empty sheets. At the most, on some pages, a few Egyptian hieroglyphics scribbled down to serve him as guides, but entirely unintelligible to me, for he played almost the whole solo part from memory, since, as usual, he lacked the time to write it down. Well, thus, he only gave me a furtive sign when he reached the end of an invisible passage. My scarcely concealed anxiety lest I miss the decisive moment amused him a good deal, and during our common merry supper after the concert, he split his sides laughing about it." The piano part was apparently not written down until more than a year after the performance, when Beethoven finally transcribed it from his head onto paper for its performance in an Ogarten concert in July 1804. The score of the third concerto is inscribed Concerto 1800 da L.V. Beethoven. The year 1800 also saw the composition of the first symphony, the E-flat septet, the Opus 18 quartets, the Opus 22 piano sonata, and the oratorio Christ on the Mount of Olives. It is especially in the concerto, however, that a new, deeper mode of expression in Beethoven's music became evident. The key of C minor, the same as that of the Fifth Symphony, the complete integration of piano and orchestra, and the enriched texture all point toward the great masterpieces which were soon to come from his pen. Now here's what to listen for. The first movement opens with the longest introductory orchestral tutti in Beethoven's concertos, virtually a full symphonic exposition in itself. The strings in unison present immediately the main theme, a group of pregnant figures, assessed Tovi, which nobody but Beethoven could have invented. The lyrical second theme is sung by violins and clarinet in a contrasting major mode. After this extended preface, the piano joins the orchestra in elaborating the themes in Beethoven's inimitable processes of transformation and expansion. The closely reasoned development section grows inexorably from thematic fragments heard in the exposition. The recapitulation begins with a forceful restatement of the main theme by the full orchestra. The second theme and other melodic materials follow, always given a heightened emotional weight over their initial appearances, and lead to a cadenza written by Beethoven that takes on the character of a development section for the soloist. The orchestra re-enters, at first accompanied by quiet, ethereal chords in the piano, but soon rising to a stern climax, which draws the movement to a close. The second movement is a nocturnal of tender sentiments and quiet moods. Though analysis reveals its form to be a three-part structure, it is, in spirit, simply an extended song, a marvelous juxtaposition of hymnal tranquility and sensuous operatic love scene. The gossamer filigree from the piano in the wondrous central section, the boundless calm of the harmonic structure, and the richness of the orchestral palette make this one of the most romantic pieces Beethoven ever composed. The traditional classical rondo was a form of simple high spirits, meant to send the audience away in a bubbling mood. Mozart and his incomparable late concertos had begun to explore the emotional depth possible with the rondo. And in this third concerto, Beethoven continued that search. Mozart's concerto number 24 in C minor, by the way, was an important model for Beethoven's work. Beethoven incorporated elements of sonata design into the finale to lend it additional weight, even inserting a fugal passage in the second episode. Only in the closing pages is the dark world of C minor abandoned for a vivacious romp through C major to close this wonderful work. The third piano concerto is among the first of Beethoven's mature masterworks. Of it, Scott Goddard wrote, "He had learned all his teachers could give him. In this year, 1800, he was expressing with absolute clarity and often with astonishing force and cogency a unique individuality." The instrumentation for this work is as follows. For solo piano, two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, two horns, two trumpets, timpani, and strings. Following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage to perform Watermark for Piano and Orchestra, a co-commission of the North Carolina Symphony, composed by Caroline Shaw. Shaw was born August 1, 1982, in Greenville, North Carolina. And the work was composed in 2018 and 19. The first performance, January 31st, 2019, performed by the Seattle Symphony, Ludovic Morlot conducting with Jonathan Biss as the soloist. Now here is the overview. Caroline Shaw made one of the most dramatic entries of any American composer into the consciousness of the music world. In 2013, at age 30, she won the Pulitzer Prize for Music for her Partita for Eight Voices, the youngest person ever to receive that award, one of the music world's most prestigious honors. As with most overnight successes, in quotes, however, Shaw had worked diligently and productively since childhood, studying violin as a youngster in her native North Carolina, composing from age 10, at first imitations of chamber music by Mozart and Brahms, earning bachelor's degrees, Rice University in 2004, and master's degrees from Yale in 2007 in violin, and working on a doctorate in composition at Princeton. She firmly established herself on the New York music scene as a violinist adept in a wide range of styles, vocalist with a remarkable a cappella ensemble Room Full of Teeth, for whom she wrote Partita, which also received a Grammy nomination for Best Classical Composition, backup singer and violinist on Saturday Night Live with Paul McCartney, The Late Show with David Letterman with The National, and The Tonight Show with The Roots, also as a collaborator on an album with rapper Kanye West. Shaw was the inaugural musician in residence at Dumbarton Oaks from 2014 to 15 and resident composer with Vancouver's Music on Main from 2014 through 2016. Now, in addition to her Pulitzer Prize, Shaw has been a Rice Goliard Fellow, busking and fiddling in Sweden, a Yale Baroque Ensemble Fellow, and a recipient of the Thomas J. Watson Fellowship, which empowers students to expand their vision, test, and develop their potential, during which she studied historical formal gardens and lived out of a backpack for a year. Caroline, according to her website, loves the color yellow, avocados, otters, salted chocolate, kayaking, Beethoven Opus 74, which is the harp quartet, Mozart opera, the smell of rosemary, and the sound of a janky mandolin. Shaw's new work, co-commissioned by the North Carolina Symphony, is part of a project originated by pianist Jonathan Biss, who is among his generation's foremost interpreters of Beethoven. He has performed the concertos and solo sonatas in concert throughout his career and is now nearing the end of a 9-year project to record all the sonatas for Onyx Classics, an effort he has supplemented with a book titled Beethoven Shadow, about the joys and challenges of the undertaking, and an online course exploring Beethoven's piano sonatas, which is offered by the Curtis Institute of Music, where he studied and now teaches. One of the central tasks for any musician, whether composer or performer, Biss said, is to come to terms with Beethoven. What this means is that any serious composer will have plenty to say on the subject of Beethoven. That is why the idea of asking composers to write a piece that in some way responds to Beethoven excited me. In 2015, I asked 5 different, very different composers to address this question. The Project Beethoven 5, done in association with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, takes 5 different compositional voices from different parts of the world and different musical traditions, and asks each of them to write a work which, in whatever way they see fit, responds to one of the Beethoven piano concertos. The commissions were awarded to Timo Andres from the United States, who paired with Beethoven's Concerto No. 2, Sally Beamish from England with the Concerto No. 1, Salvatore Sciarrino from Italy, No. 4, Brett Dean from Australia, No. 5, and Caroline Shaw, Concerto No. 3. Now here's what to listen for. In her piano concerto, Watermark, Shaw did not try to arrange or rewrite or imitate or paraphrase Beethoven, but rather filtered elements of the third concerto. Its 3-movement, fast flow, fast, slow, fast form, its chamber size orchestra, many details of texture, scoring, tone color, and harmonic effect. Ways of building structure through repetition, contrast, and variation, and through her own 21st century sensibility. It was a process of deep dive, she explained, deep absorption, listening intuitively, some score study, but mostly hearing different recordings, becoming aware of certain harmonic shifts and details of orchestration. She quoted Beethoven's concerto hardly at all, though there are little hidden Easter eggs all over, she admitted, but rather imagined it differently, the music twisting in new directions. I thought, what if instead of going through one door, it went through door number 2, or door number 26, as if blending the worlds of Beethoven and 2019. It was fun starting with this piece I love and imagining it differently, she said. Watermark, the concerto's title, and an indication of a concept that courses throughout Shaw's compositions, refers to the faint design impressed into a sheet of paper, identifying the maker and other information, sometimes indicating the date of production. Extensive research has been done into the watermarks in the papers Beethoven used and has often helped in dating his works, letters, and other writings, including the third concerto. Shaw took the watermark as a symbol of the memory of an older piece within something new and finds the stamp, the watermark, of Beethoven in her concerto. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: four solo piano, two flutes, two oboes, clarinet, bass clarinet, bassoon, contrabassoon, two horns, two trumpets, percussion, and strings. And the North Carolina Symphony concludes this performance with a presentation of the Classical Symphony Opus 25 by Sergei Prokofiev. Prokofiev was born April 23, 1891, in Sontsovka and died March 5, 1953, in Moscow. The work was composed in 1916 and 1917, and the first performance was April 21, 1918, St. Petersburg, conducted by the composer himself. Now here is the overview. In the field of instrumental music, I am well content with the forms already perfected. I want nothing better, nothing more flexible or more complete than sonata form, which contains everything necessary to my structural purpose. This statement, given to Olin Downs by Prokofiev during an interview in 1930 for the New York Times, seems a curious one for a composer who had gained a reputation as an ear-shattering iconoclast, the enfant terrible of 20th century music, the master of modernity. While it is certainly true that some of his earlier works, A Scythian Suite, Sarcasms, the first two piano concertos, raise the hackles of musical traditionalists, it is also true that Prokofiev sought to preserve that same tradition by extending its boundaries to encompass his own distinctive style. A glance through the list of his works shows a preponderance of established classical forms: sonatas, symphonies, concertos, operas, ballets, quartets, overtures, and suites account for most of his output. This is certainly not to say that he merely mimicked the music of earlier generations, but he did accept it as the conceptual framework within which he built his own compositions. Prokofiev's penchant for using classical musical idioms was instilled in him during the course of his thorough, excellent training. When he was a little tot, his mother played Beethoven sonatas to him while he sat under the piano. He began composing at the Mozartian age of six, and he studied with the greatest Russian musicians of the time, Glier, Rimsky-Korsakov, Liadov, Glazunov, and Cherepin. By the time he was 25, Prokofiev was composing prolifically, always brewing a variety of compositions simultaneously. The works of 1917, for example, represent widely different styles. The Gambler is a satirical opera. They Are Seven, a nearly atonal cantata. The Classical Symphony, a charming miniature. This last piece was a direct result of Prokofiev's study with Alexander Cherepin, a good and wise teacher who allowed the young composer to forge ahead in his own manner while making sure that he had a thorough understanding of the great musical works of the past. It was in 1916 that Prokofiev first had the idea for a symphony based on the Viennese model supplied by Cherepin, and at that time, he sketched out a few themes for it. Most of the work, however, was done the following year, as Prokofiev recounted in his autobiography. This is a quote: "I spent the summer of 1917 in complete solitude in the environs of Petrograd. I read Kant, and I worked hard. I had purposely not had my piano moved to the country because I wanted to establish the fact that thematic material worked out without a piano is better. The idea occurred to me to compose an entire symphonic work without the piano. Composed in this fashion, the orchestral colors would of necessity be clearer and cleaner. Thus, the plan of a symphony in Haydnesque style originated since, as a result of my studies in Cherepin's classes, Haydn's techniques had somehow become especially clear to me, and with such intimate understanding, it was much easier to plunge into the dangerous flood without a piano. It seemed to me that, were he alive today, Haydn, while retaining his style of composition, would have appropriated something from the modern. Such a symphony I now wanted to compose, a symphony in the classic manner. As it began to take actual form, I named it Classical Symphony, first, because it was the simplest thing to call it, second, out of bravado, to stir up a hornet's nest, and finally, in the hope that should the symphony prove itself in time to be truly classic, it would benefit me considerably. Prokofiev's closing wish has been fulfilled. The Classical Symphony has been one of the most successful works ever since it was first heard. Now, here's what to listen for in this composition. The work is in the four movements customary in Haydn's symphonies, though at only 15 minutes it hardly runs to half their typical length. The dapper first movement is a miniature sonata design that follows the traditional form but adds some quirks that would have given old Haydn himself a chuckle. The recapitulation, for example, begins in the wrong key but soon writes itself, and occasionally a beat is left out, as though the music had stubbed its toe. The sleek main theme is followed by the enormous leaps, flashing grace notes, and sparse texture of the second subject. A graceful, ethereal melody floating high in the violins is used to open and close the larghetto, separated by a pizzicato middle section. The gavotte comes not from the Viennese symphony, but from the French Baroque ballet. The brilliant finale calls for remarkable feats of agility and precise ensemble. The instrumentation for this work is two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, two horns, two trumpets, timpani, and strings. These notes were written and copyrighted in 2019 by Dr. Richard E. Rota, and the notes for the overture to The Creatures of Prometheus were copyrighted in 2018 by Joseph and Elizabeth Kahn. You've been listening to Program Notes for Your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'll be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2019 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will be available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas, and thank you for joining me today. I sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.